Thank you for tuning in to the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. Please subscribe to our weekly Boston Bruins Hockey Talk on listening platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify Podcasts. We'd certainly appreciate it if you give our show a 5-star rating along with a written review. You can also subscribe to our official YouTube channel for a video version of our weekly program. If you'd like to support our show financially, please go to our blackandgoldhockey.com website and click on our affiliated Fanatics banner before shopping online. Another way to financially support our weekly program is to become a Patreon member to be eligible for weekly Boston hockey prizes and monthly Boston Bruins hand-signed jersey giveaways. Please go to patreon.com/blackandgoldhockeypodcast and donate just $1 per episode. Many thanks for the continued support and enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast, episode 274. We're doing a live stream today. All the Boston Bruins hockey talk that's been going on. It's an exciting time of the year. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty of the season. It is getting into deeper April, and the playoffs are shortly around the corner. So I'm your host, Mark Allred, with my boy, Kevin O'Keefe. And we have a special guest, Angelo. Ange, what is happening?
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Really cloudy day over here in shitty Montreal, but, you know, wish I was in Boston.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't blame you.
How's Kevin doing?
Doing all right. Doing all right. I'm hanging in there.
Good. Good. Glad to hear it. Before we get going, we do want to hear from our show sponsor, BetOnline.ag. BetOnline.ag is your number one source for all your betting needs and sports info and odds. Find all the latest sports developments, including this week's odds for the Masters Championship and the start of the Major League Baseball season. BetOnline.ag is your continued source for all your sporting wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino and poker games. It's super easy to get started, so join today. Learn why everyone is saying BetOnline.ag is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your popular sports and games. BetOnline.ag, it's where the game starts. All right, and we are back. I just heard myself talk about BetOnline.ag. The Masters are going on, NHL hockey, baseball started up, and football, and basketball still rolling along. A little pun there with a roll, huh, Kev?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Go to betonline.ag and use that code CLNS50. We would certainly appreciate it. All right. So, like I said, I probably didn't say this, but it is an agenda-free topic. So, we're just going to sit here and talk some Boston Bruins. If you have any questions, hit us up in the chat, please. We'd certainly appreciate that to keep the conversation going. But why don't we start off with Ange. Ange, you're coming in from Montreal. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became a Boston Bruins fan real quick.
You know what? Growing up over here, I was lucky enough that my family wasn't diehard, let's say, Montreal fans, you know. But it was the 88 series. You know, that series where you know, Lemelin and Neely, and it was like ramped up that, you know, Montreal hadn't, Boston hadn't beat Montreal for ages. And that's kind of when I started to get interested in hockey. So I was, it was kind of like being in school and there was a lot of hype, and I kind of said, you know what, whoever wins this series, I'm kind of going to cheer for. And, you know, the gods were watching, thank God, and Boston won that series, because if not, I would have ended up, you know, on the dark side.
Oh, yeah. In the dark times right now, too.
Yeah, but, you know, it's been, you know, I can't picture being a fan of anything else. I identify with this team in so many ways, you know, that hardworking ethic. And, you know, it's just... Once it's in you, man, it's in the blood. You can't get it out.
Oh yeah,
good for you, man. That's awesome. It's almost like we do have a lot of listeners and friends that live in Ontario too. So it's like, yeah, you know, they're constantly around the Toronto Maple Leafs all the time, and yeah, you know, you hear them talk about how bad it is up there. It's just a whining, I guess. You know.
Yeah. Oh, you know, Toronto fans in particular, I find they're so entitled. I don't know if it's because they have the Hall of Fame there or the Cup is there, and they think it's theirs all the time, you know, but I don't think they had the Cup since before the invention of color TV. So I don't know what they're bragging about or anything like that, you know?
You didn't hear, Ainge? They already won the Cup this year and last year.
Yeah, they win every year, you know? It's like, yeah, it's like I love it here right now because it's really quiet, you know? And the fact that, you know, even their playoff run last year was pretty quiet. I think they all realized that it was like a make-believe playoff run, you know, something out of that that show there, you know, Hocus Pocus or something. Like, it wasn't even a real playoff format, so they can't even brag about that, you know.
No, that's blowing awesome. A 3-1 lead to the Montreal Canadiens. Oof. Crazy,
honestly.
All right, why don't we talk about some times that are going on right now in the Boston Bruins organization? They just got done with game three of a 4-game road trip, and that 4-game road trip finishes up tomorrow afternoon at 1:30 in Washington. And then it goes for a 3-game homestand against St. Louis, Ottawa, and Pittsburgh. So there's a lot of exciting action that's coming up. Any causes for concern at this point, boys?
The bottom pairing is pretty much the only area where I'm having really a question mark. You know, Swayman, he's been having his rocky road here as of late, but Ullmark has been absolutely fantastic. So once again, goaltending is not an issue for me. The top four of the defense, not an issue. Carlo, I think, is really starting to come around, paired with Grizzlick. That's really great to see. McAvoy, Lindholm, that's just an absolute dominant pairing. You love to see it. And the offense is absolutely fine. I think all four of these lines can roll and give you goals. So,
absolutely. And what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm kind of on board with Kevin. I noticed it a little bit in the game yesterday. I mean, the only thing that worried me was in that third period, which is pretty much the last half of the third period was all I really got to watch live, that they were hemmed in the zone. And I was a little bit worried about, yeah, we got a little bit of depth, but I'm wondering if this depth can handle a 7-game series. That was one game yesterday. But, you know, if there's an injury in a 7-game series, you know, day in and day out against, you know, a team like Tampa, I'm wondering if, you know, they might be able to pull off one game. But that's kind of what worries me, you know, depending on how long these injuries go in these last few games, which are essentially all playoff games no matter who you play. You know, I'm wondering if that's something that is a little bit worrisome, if they can handle the gruel of every day, you know?
Yeah, and Fludo Jinzawa just tweeted out that Hampus Lindholm is not practicing today. It is an off day, so that could be more or less like a maintenance thing for the Boston Bruins and more precautionary. And if there's an optional skate tomorrow before the game, he could get in there to get his legs stretched out. Joe Haggerty, who was at the TD Garden recently, I think it was sometime last week when I quote tweeted it, mentioned that he walked right by Lindholm, walked right by Haggerty, and there wasn't any limping or hindrance that he could notice, and no boot at all. So those are positive signs of hopefully this getting done quicker than a long-term thing and into the playoffs where it could be a concern, because this type of defenseman that came in via the trade deadline has really put an impact on that top pairing with Charlie McAvoy. And I think that the both have worked really well. And Hampus is the type of player that can also be shuffled down to the second line if needed. If you know, Carlo needs some protection and so on, I mean, he could play that and shelter his minutes a little bit and give Hampus some time. But, you know, it is a cause for concern, and I get it. But it is weird. I listened to the Short Shift podcast recently, actually yesterday, and they were mentioning that this is not the time when you generally have these injuries, like the beginning of the season, to where you get really hampered with them. So, I can understand where you're coming from with the depth concern, but I think we're going to be all right. I don't think it's that bad of an injury. I think it's more just precautionary.
I think if it was playoffs, both him and Paso would probably be playing. I got that based on what Brick and Jack were saying the first game they were out. Like, if they had to go, they probably would be going. So maybe they're being precautionary. But that Lindholm move, I was chatting also with on Twitter with some of the guys from Short Shift, and I was saying I love it. It was kind of like three moves in one. You know, because it's not just what he brings, which is what this team, the main piece that this team basically needed, but it's what he frees up for McAvoy to do, which is like the secondary move. And not only that, but it's when you bring it, sometimes people won't, we don't take into consideration what it does for a team in a locker room when your general manager goes out and gets a big piece like that. You know, the team gets a lift, you know, a big time lift and a big, you know, push of confidence. And I'm sure guys like, you know, the leaders, Marshy, Bergeron in the room, they're saying, hey, guys, listen, you know, they're behind us. They're giving us this, you know, this is reason for us. And I think it's shown in their play. You know, I think it's given them that extra boost. You know, this is a team that prides itself, you know. Another thing I've talked about on Twitter many times is flipping the switch, sometimes to a fault, because they'll fall behind in games and they'll just say, okay, we'll flip the switch. But if there's any team that could do it, you know, it's these guys. And I'm sure, you know, the energy that a move like this brings is you know, it's intangible, but it's there.
Yeah.
And to go back to the depth thing for just a second, I guess it depends on which depth pieces we're talking. I mean, which pieces we're talking about losing. I mean, if you lose a David Pastrnak, if you lose a Brad Marchand or Patrice Bergeron or somebody of that caliber, it's going to be hard no matter what your depth is to be able to replace somebody like that. I think the same can be said for any team. If Tampa were to lose a Kucherov or a Braden Point or a Steven Stamkos or a guy of that caliber, it's going to be tough to, you know, bring in anyone really, because their talents are unmatched. But if we're talking about like Lazar goes down, yeah, that's a simple fix.
Yeah, you got plug and play.
Yeah, if we're talking about Coyle went down, I mean, that's like a medium impact, in my opinion, not a high impact, more of a medium. But that guy can bring in the playoffs. I mean, geez. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is when it comes down to it, you're not going to be able to replace that regardless of what you have for depth. Even if they went out and got Andrew Kopp at the deadline, let's say they went out and got him and Bergeron goes down. Yeah. It lessens the impact a little bit, but you can still have Holla and Coyle in your top six. Yeah. I think that's the equivalent to having a guy like a Kopp there. You know, so I don't really see I'm not too worried about the depth. I think they have some guys in Bleed and Steen and McLaughlin's now. McLaughlin's look great, by the way. He fits right. Last night, from what I saw, he looked great. He's got some nice stretch passes going. He's very aware of his surroundings. He's able to jump on pucks and create opportunities. I think he's going to be a very underrated pickup for this team when it comes to the playoffs and needing a body to fill in. I think he's going to be a factor. I really do.
No, for sure. In concerns for the depth, I should have probably mentioned I'm more worried about the defense. The forward lines as they are constructed now. And as everybody's playing, I mean, look at that goal that Jake scored last night, right? Look at those hands and the patience, and like especially looking at it on the replay. Even Jake, vintage Jake, when he was scoring, you know, 27 goals there, that greasy Jake, that's not the goals he was scoring. The patience and the hands that he had for that goal, and you're literally watching him wait for Vasilevskiy to open that up. I mean, if he keeps up that level of play, you know, and I'm sure obviously playing with two of the best, you learn and you feed off of that. But and then the sequence line, you know, minus that brain fart from Frederick last night, they've been playing great. So I'm not as worried with the forward group. I'm just worried that the defense, if they can handle the pressure, if we lose a big piece like Lindholm or McAvoy, yeah. You know, they might, like I said, pull off a game or two, but a 7-game series against a team like Tampa, it's going to be hard. They come at you in waves, right?
Yeah. You saw that last season with the Islanders. I mean, Carlo went down and it just became a crap show. Luckily, though, if someone went down on the left side, I'd say we're pretty good. But the right side, yeah, that'd be a concern. If someone went down, like if either Carlo or McAvoy went down on the right side, I mean, that's tough. I think Lindholm can play the right side, though, if needed. I'm pretty sure. So you could technically put Lindholm over on that side, and then you'd still have Grizzlick, Forbort, and Riley for your left side there. It's not ideal, but I mean, it's never ideal when you lose a big piece like that trying to fill it in. I mean, regardless of where in the lineup it is, I mean,
absolutely,
it's tough, you know, and you can get as much depth as you can, but you definitely can't have another McAvoy waiting, you know, and I don't think you think that, by the way. I'm not saying you do.
No.
But there are people out there who literally act like, oh, well, what happens if McAvoy goes down? Well, you don't have another McAvoy sitting there waiting to jump in if McAvoy 1 goes down. You don't have McAvoy 2, you know? It's like you have to figure it out.
It's funny. Sometimes I feel like – I'm sorry, Mark, you want to
– No, go ahead. Go ahead, Andrew.
Sometimes I feel like and I've kind of backed off on this type of talk on Twitter. I just keep it more to my sarcastic comments because sometimes you get into it with people and it becomes too big of a deal. I have a 9-year-old who's just starting to watch hockey. So – obviously, he's disappointed every time the Bruins lose. So I have to, like, sit him down and kind of explain to him, you know, like, you have to understand if a piece like, you know, Chucky goes down, it's hard to fill in like that. And you always have to keep in mind there's another team out there, you know, that's just as good as you, you know, if not better on some nights. So as fans, sometimes we get into the whole, like, you know, fandom of it and, like, oh, you know, We lost this piece and we don't have depth, but you know that piece, like Kevin said, is not a piece you can easily replace. You can't replace Bergeron. You can do it from, you know, patch it for a night or two maybe, but you can't replace a piece like that. You know, Rask. You mentioned the Islanders. Had Rask been healthy, we probably win that series.
We win it
before Carlo goes down.
That's a factor. You
know? Yeah, that's fair. My boy Steve McEachran, solid supporter of all BNG stuff. He comes in. How concerned should we be about Pasternak's injury?
Not concerned. I'm not concerned, at least.
I think they could probably play now if they need to.
Yeah, they're being cautious.
Yeah,
I think so too. It seems to be the same thing. The core injury. That got him a little bit. You could see it in his movements in previous when it's acted up a little bit. The grimace on his face when he tries to do something sudden. So, yeah, I think it's more or less precautionary. I'm not overly concerned about it, but you know, it would.
And like he's still scoring.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. He's still being a productive player. But I mean, when you talk about Pasternak, there's so many good things to talk about, but there also are some negative things that I, you know, gravitate to. His zone entries are just sometimes tough to watch. I know I've said it a couple times. When he is going full motor and he's trying to stick handle around people, it's just he loses the puck at the wrong time. I know giving a turnover up like that is never good, but. When you're that talented and so on, you expect your zone entries to be a little better or just get a little deeper. So if you do have to have that mistake, that the your accompanying defensemen that are coming in layers have time to turn around and get back into the play and not like leave mounds and mounds of wide ice open for that damn stretch pass or that big flop that goes up and over that we always get caught in. So
I wonder, I don't know this. I'm not a statistics guy and I'm more of like just a passionate fan, but I wonder how many of the shorthanded goals against we have when we're on the power play happen when he's on the point or he's trying to make an entry. I don't know. I'm asking if maybe there's a statistic out there, but
without looking at it or looking it up, I could probably tell you about 90% of the time that guy should never be near the blue line ever, ever. I mean, I love Pasta, like Mark said, you know, great player, but defensive side of things, the awareness of being able to understand like, hey, I shouldn't cough the puck up right here. So instead of trying to, you know, pull off my best highlight move here, maybe I should look for the safer play. There's a few little awareness things like that with him, but you gotta, you know, you give and you take when it comes to Pasternak. I mean, the guy's going to put up like freaking, you know, he's good for 40 to 50 goals a season for you. So you're going to, you know, you're going to give and take on that for sure.
And he's gotten better defensively, by the way. That's the thing, you know.
He has, yeah. But it's just those moments where he just, you know, he's not really aware of what exactly he should be doing in that moment. And he just needs to catch up. He needs to catch up with himself. It's like he's thinking six steps ahead, like, oh, I'm going to deke through this guy, and then I'm going to deke through the next guy. Well, actually, you just coughed up the puck, and they're going the other way on a 2-on-1. So you need to chill on that. You need to look for a safer place. There's times and places where it's good to do stuff like that if you feel like you can pull that off. And that's when you have backup, not when, you know, it's a line change and you're trying to break into the offensive zone and you're trying to deke through somebody and they just rip the puck away and pass it up for a 2-on-1 or, you know, any type of odd man break. It's just going to lead to bad stuff. So, but I'm not overly concerned with Pasternak. I mean, when you look at it, the Bruins are in a gray area right now. They want to make sure their players are good for the playoffs, and they also want to push for the highest seed possible. It's really tough to do both, but if I had to choose one personally, I'd be going for making sure the players who have nagging injuries have that taken care of before the playoffs. Because at the end of the day, when you look at Carolina, when you look at Tampa, Florida, Toronto, when you look at the East in general, and that's just in your division, that's not even in the other division where you have, you know, well, actually I said Carolina, but where you have, you know, like the Rangers who are a dark horse for me, and you have, you know, I wouldn't really say Washington, but you got the Penguins who are also another good team there. It's going to be tough no matter what. So if you get in as the second wild card, at least your players are ready to go. Because if you go into the playoffs beaten and battered, but you got the second seed and you're playing, let's say, Tampa, and you got home ice, I don't care what ice you have. I don't care about that. Your team is going to be completely beaten and battered before they can even get through two rounds, one round of the playoffs. So
I think the consensus is in the East, it doesn't really matter, right? It doesn't really matter who you play. It's going to – or at home or away. I mean, and the Bruins haven't been – I think, if anything, they've been better on the road, right, this year? So I don't –
it might be
evening
out now. I'm
kind of with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you. You know, let's watch the health and –
it's freaking even. Listen to this. The home record, 22-11-2. Away record, 23-10-3.
Yeah, it's evening out now. But still, I mean, that just shows that you can do it, you know, whatever building you're in.
Right, right. And they're also 8-2-0 in their last 10, and their goal differential has gone up tremendously up to 34. They're probably not going to catch Toronto with one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10 more games to go. So, I mean, Florida's got a plus 85 goal differential. They're just firing on all cylinders this season. 106 points after 71 games played. That's just nuts. But
yeah, but what? How's that going to translate in the playoffs? It's kind of, for me, Florida, obviously, they're a great team, but you know, what have you done for me lately type of thing? You know, it's great that you have these numbers in the regular season,
Yep.
You know, look at the Tampa in 2019. And then they, you know, Tampa 2019, I think, lost a handful of games in the season. They never lost two games in a row. So now that you go into a series where you lose the first game, and then you lose the second, this is right off the bat, it's adversity they never encountered that season. And they broke down.
You know what's funny is I'm not shitting on Tampa Bay. They are a great team, great goaltending. The defense is stacked with Hedman and so on. But I kind of get this feeling, and I've said this several times in other podcasts, and I know Kevin's heard me talk about it, but this is the first full year Tampa Bay is going to play since they got out of the playoffs from the sweep from the Columbus Blue Jackets. Sure. I kind of have a feeling that they're going to do the same thing this year and just kind of flatten out, not have anything in the first round and get out quickly. Just because they're getting back to a full season. They played the last two seasons with their cup wins. They played less games. So this might be taking a heavier toll on them. And you can see how they're playing right now because they have dropped into the first wild card spot with 94 points and only 1 point behind the Boston Bruins.
And they've lost four in a row.
Mm-hmm. But the thing with Tampa is they have, and I'm kind of like you, Mark, in this. I'm a little bit of a goaltending buff. So, like, in a game, I'll watch the goalies a lot. They have Vasilevskiy. Vasilevskiy could definitely steal you a series or two. But watching him yesterday and watching how some of the goals went in and how the Bruins, I think, were purposely trying to move him, he does have certain gaps. You know, all goalies have that weakness when they're in transition from one side to another. Things tend to open up. But he does have certain, like the goal that Coyle scored. Yeah, high danger area. He was alone in front of the net. But it's just, he looked really small when he got into that butterfly. And something interesting about Allmark, I noticed, is you watch Allmark when a player is coming right down on him. He's not going down on his butterfly. He's going, I think they call it the reverse VH. He has one knee down and one knee up, and his glove is up. Now, usually a goalie will do that on a wraparound or like when he's sealing a post. This guy's doing it when you're coming at him. And I'm watching Allmark, and I'm like, A, I've never seen this before, and maybe it has been done, but he looks so big.
Yeah.
And he has good hands. So his glove hand is strong. His blocker hand is strong. He's obviously not worried about his corners, but he just took up so much room. He only goes in the butterfly, I noticed, when there's a movement, when there's either a pass or the puck is coming in, you know?
Yeah, the last couple of games I've been watching Allmark really closely, and particularly after the goal he gave up when it just whizzed right by his head and he wasn't protecting the post appropriately.
Yeah.
Since that, I've been watching him, and he's been really covering that post high right here, but he's also like leaning his head, putting his head more involved because he's gotten exposed a couple times this year by that. It's just that top corner is wide open for people just to, and you could sit basically on the goal line and just like roof it over his head. But I think he's more prepared for that. And I think he's worked with goalie Bob and on his positioning when he's down in there and he's covering the post.
Razor touched on that. Razor, I find this, I love listening to Razor. Yep. Because his analysis, obviously, is coming from a player, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And he touched on that. Remember the last game of the season last year where we had all the rookies and there was that goal, I think, that went in off the back of Swayman's head? Mm-hmm. Right? And he touched on that a little bit, how it's tough for a bigger goalie to kind of, like, close that off. And it leaves, like, it exposed a little bit, you know? If anybody was a goaltending buff and you don't already, listen to Razor's commentary. The guy is phenomenal.
I do every time. I'm never on the edge when I listen to him. Like when everybody freaked out about Swayman going down to Providence, he was like the calming voice out there that says, this happens. It's routine. He's on an entry-level contract. It's expected that he's going to have these ups and downs and go down to the AHL to learn more. The shiny
little fire news under his ass.
Yeah, the shiny new toy brigade, they absolutely drive me freaking nuts. You know, it's like, oh my God, what are you doing? You're going to ruin this kid's career. It's like, no, you're not. It's not like you're sending a 30-year-old down there. It's going to go through waivers. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Off and then Rascal down.
Yeah, He went down quite a few. Yeah,
quite a bit. And he turned into probably the greatest, you know, goaltender we've had. Sorry, Kevin.
No, that's fine. Yeah, before we get to some comments here, it's funny that you mentioned the puck off the back of the helmet thing there, and also Andrew Raycroft in the same sentence, because back it was Joe Thornton's last home game playing for the Boston Bruins. They wore the Pooh Bears. It was a matinee game against the Philadelphia Flyers at the old Fleet Center. I was there, and a puck actually came off the back of the glass, hit Andrew Raycroft in the back of the helmet, and went in the net.
Oof.
It was a tough one to watch.
What are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do?
All right, let's get to some of these questions. This is Momo Adamo, and he asks, do you think Jake chooses to stay in Boston? I don't think it's not a choice for Jake DeBrusk anymore. And it wasn't even before the trade deadline. He's under contract, so and he signed an extension for 2 more years. So ultimately, the team holds the cards in this situation. It's not on Jake. If the Boston Bruins see value out there, like I don't believe they saw on the trade market this year, they wouldn't have made a move. But I don't think they got what they wanted in value back, so they kept them. And keeping them for 2 more years also holds a little bit of leverage in your trading. If you are going to trade him, if he seems like he's happy, he's energetic, he's you know, very, very you know, into the crowd before the games. He's happy to be playing hockey, regardless of the rumors of he's not happy with the coaching or this and that. You know, we get the trade requests out there, but it might have been a motivating factor. But the team doesn't have to trade him just because he asked to. So I don't know. Depending on like what I've talked about several times is we're probably going to see what Jake DeBrusk has in the playoffs too. And what other teams are going to see is how he produced in the second half of this regular season and the playoffs. And then they'll do evaluations on if we want to give up assets, a good asset for a player like this, that has now a little bit of term and has been playing pretty good as of late.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the whole situation, it's hard to read in a sense, because when you look at Jake DeBrusk and, like you said, the fun he's having out there, it looks like he gets along with his teammates very well. From what I'm understanding, he has no problem with the coaching staff. It just seems like it wasn't a good fit for him at the time. And he did go through a lot of pandemic stuff there that really messed with him, so... I think there's definitely a chance that he rescinds his trade request, like we've talked about here on this podcast before. But whether or not Sweeney still decides to move him or not, I mean, that's going to depend on what they see here and what they have in Jake, because we've seen the song and dance with him before. I mean, I like the player. I'm not trashing the player or anything like that, but this seems to be his MO, you know, take the first half of the season off, turn it on. And I guess that's fine in a sense, because you really want your players playing at their best, you know, at the end, you know, at the tail end of the season and the playoffs and stuff like that. You want to see stuff like that, but it's one of those things where, I don't know, you want a player playing 100% of the time. And from what I'm seeing something out of Jake DeBrusk that I have not seen in a long time. Maybe at all, to be honest, with the way he's been playing with this top line. Whether that's a product of playing with Marchand and Bergeron, that's to be seen. But, I mean, he just looks reinvigorated. He is in it. Like, he looks in it to win it with this team. So, you got to love to see that.
You know what? I'm starting to think... It was never maybe a player coach issue. Maybe it's something personal. Like, we've heard a lot that he finds it far from home, and maybe the COVID, just that whole situation. Sorry, I don't know if I'm supposed to say that or not, but the pandemic brought the whole situation, you know, even, you know, closer to home, where it's like he's so far away from family. Maybe I'm starting to think it's more something like that than it is with the players, because they all seem to love him. You know, you see glimpses of Cassidy and him having, you know, good conversation on the bench. And, you know, I don't know. I just I, at the end of the day, I think he wants to move for other reasons, and ultimately he will be moved, you know. And yeah. What better way than after a good playoff run where the value is high? You
know? Exactly. Pejman is in the house. What's up, Pejman? Oh, he's always interacting with us on these live streams and stuff. We truly appreciate that. But he says, what's up, boys? The power play is very frustrating to watch. Zone entry should be great with all the talent, but no one has been able to gain the zone clearly on a consistent basis since Krejci and Krug left. So that's an interesting point. Two people that can drive the play, even though Krejci was a little bit of the on the slower side. What are your thoughts on the power play leading up to the last 10 games of the season and potential first round playoff with a pretty decent team that's ahead of us?
Well, first I want to go ahead and do my annual pronunciation test here. Pejman Hajiji. Hajiji. We're going to go with that. So there we go. But I mean, the power play itself, I mean, it's hard to believe that we're as highly ranked as we are with this power play watching them. I mean, they're so hot and cold. It's like they'll have some good entries. They'll have a ton of time. They'll get some goals. They'll do everything right. I mean, sometimes it won't produce a goal, but it'll look good. Then you have these times where they can't do crap. They can't gain the entry. They refuse to dump the puck in. They refuse. They're just like, nope, we have to be able to skate over there cleanly and then draw it back to the defenseman. That's literally their MO. And it's like, come on, like dump the puck in, allow someone to go in there and bang the body and get the puck and set something up. I mean, if it's not working, you have to try something else, or else they're going to continue to defend you the exact same way, and you're not going to make any headway on that power play. It can be very frustrating to watch because it's almost like an all-star team that you have out there on the ice in Charlie McAvoy, Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak, and Taylor Hall being your top power play unit. I mean, that's one hell of a unit. And you just got to get the chemistry going. You got to figure it out. You got to change your entries if you need to when it's not working. I understand gaining the zone and being able to do an entry like that works at times, which is great. But sometimes you just got to get the puck in deep and go after it.
A lot of the times when I watch the power play, it reminds me of Hoosiers. And I know I bring this up a lot, but it's an old basketball movie when Gene Hackman was like in Indiana and in, you know, went to the school and so on. And he would literally tell his players, do not take a shot before you pass it 11 times. And a lot of the times I find this Boston Bruins team overpasses on the man advantage. And when they could have, could capitalize on, you know, not so many passes per se. But ultimately, it's your finish on the power play. You're a man down. You're at an advantage. You got to capitalize. And for me, it's a lot of overpassing, in my opinion.
Yep, that too.
I agree. I think it comes down to lack of imagination, really, because the power play has been good or decent for so many years, but it's that one or two weapon thing. You know, you have Bergeron floating up and down in the bumper. Well, teams know that now. You have Pasta in his office, you know, so you have that pass. Teams know that now. And, you know, the X factor is always Marshy, you know, playing around the net and coming on the half wall and whatever. But once teams get that, I find the Bruins get lost in, you know, lack of imagination. And like Kevin said, they're kind of like trying these passes and it's not, you know, they're forcing it.
Absolutely. Steve McEachran coming back in here with another question. Do you guys think the contracts we have signed and the prospects we have are enough to avoid a full-scale rebuild after Bergeron and Marchand are gone?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting some pieces that are low risk, potentially high reward stuff out of the NCAA. And I know that is a frustrating point for a lot of fans north of the border. And I'm not poking at my boy Ange down here at all. But there's a lot of really good Canadian folk that believe that they don't get enough Bruins players from Canada. And that's, that really frustrates people. And it's like Donnie stays inside of 495, you know, it's, come on. It's just, you know, there are good players all over the world. Where you get them, I don't put any, you know, heavy thought into where certain players come from and so on. But he's loading up on NCAA players, and he got one today that signed. His name is Georgi Merkulov, and he plays, and he's a Russian, and he played for the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Hey, and Georgi.
And he was signed as a out of school as a freshman, which I found very interesting, and which is why he got a 3-year entry level contract. If he signed as a junior or sophomore, if he signed as a out of his sophomore year, he would have gotten a 2-year, and then his junior he would have gotten 1 year, and senior 1 year. So interesting stuff from that, and he scored 20 goals this season as a freshman, so that's pretty good.
I mean, when you think about it, really. The only person you're in danger of losing at the current moment that is a core piece to your group is Patrice Bergeron. I completely understand that he is irreplaceable. He is Patrice Bergeron. He's going to go down as one of the best defensive forwards to ever play the game. But at that point, you're just looking to replace one player. If he retires, you're replacing one player. You do not rebuild and blow up your team because you need one player. That's just not how it works. You know, I mean, obviously you'd like to draft and develop a center, but you can find a way to go out there and get a guy to come in and be a good fit the way they did with Eric Halla. But obviously you'd want them to be not a, you know, I mean, obviously you're looking for better than Eric Halla at that point. If you're replacing Patrice Bergeron, I mean, the names got thrown around, JT Miller, Tomas Hertl, you know, all these names. So you're going to be looking for a player like that, a guy who can be a solid, solidified first line guy. So, I mean, if he retires, like I said, you're looking for one piece. You don't blow it up. You have a good core here that you're building upon. You have Swayman, who's looking really, you know, promising here. I will never say he's elite and the number one goaltender until I am able to 100% say that and he earns it. That's just not the type of person I am. You have McAvoy, you have Carlo. I mean, maybe you have DeBrusk in the fold there. Maybe. We'll see. You have I'm probably missing names here and my mind's going blank, but I mean, you have Lindholm, McAvoy for the next 8 years, potentially.
That's crazy. I mean,
yeah, you have a lot good going for your team that you can, you know, figure it out. I mean, Brett Harrison is looking like a promising prospect that could potentially be a top six center for you. LaSalle, I mean, extremely promising winger there. He's probably going to end up being a top line talent, but he's probably going to be playing on your second line, depending on what they do. I mean, right now, with the way things are, Hall and Pasta working out, I mean, you don't want to break that up. So, but LaSalle's going to be a top six guy easily, no doubt in my mind. You got Mason Lauri, who's looking like an absolute, oh my God, like that kid is looking like he's going to be a stud top. I mean, I think he could be a top pairing defenseman. I mean, he's a stud. I mean, an absolute stud. You get Jack Eichon there, who's looking like he can be a top four guy. Zboril looking like he can be a top four guy. It's not as bad as people really think it is. You just really need to find that next center who you can, you know, if you can have Harrison and, you know, another guy playing a 1-2 punch the way that Bergeron and Krejci did for you, that'd be fantastic. It's just, you know, you got to hit. And I think the 2023 draft is where you're going to be able to maybe hit on that. You still have your second round pick for this year, so you might be able to do it this year. But I think you'll be able to find a player at some point here that you can draft and develop over a few years and get him in the fold. Or maybe bring him right in like you did a Patrice Bergeron. We'll see.
Yeah. Momo brings in, what's up with Beecham? It's actually Beecher. But Beecher is probably going to sign soon. He just finished his junior year and obviously got out of the national championship with a tough loss to Denver. That was a great game, by the way. One of the best college hockey games I've seen in a long time, going to overtime and so on. But I think we've all, I think Kevin and even Dom on the on our Black and Gold Hockey podcast that we're doing right now mentioned that, you know, after the season, it was a year for the Michigan Wolverines to really go and stretch it out for a national championship this year with a really stacked lineup. And it was a no-brainer for Beecher to jump on board with that and stay one more year to try to accomplish that type of goal. But obviously it didn't happen. And I expect Beecher to sign his entry-level deal sometime soon, within the next couple of days, I would assume. And get in the fold on an ATO and possibly finish the year down in Providence. And I still think that Johnny is going to be a, you know, a good fourth or third liner, you know, nothing higher than that. I know he was a first round pick and so on, but I like the player. I like what he can bring. He's not going to bring a ton of goals and this and that, but he could be that type of Frederick guy that could add a little bit of talent. I'm not saying he's a fighter or anything like that, but he's a gritty player. He likes to hit, use his big body, and he's got some offensive capabilities that can be rounded out with a little bit of time in Providence. I'm not saying the NHL is going to be an immediate place for him. I think he's going to continue to work, much like Mason Lowry. I think Mason, as a defenseman, is going to need a year in Providence to get adjusted as well. I don't think it's going to be, you know, an NCAA after a sophomore year to the Bruins. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, another name that I failed to mention that I should have, Mateus Mantikivi. I mean, he's looking like he can be a solid middle six guy for this team at some point as well.
Absolutely. What are my thoughts on Steen? Ange, why don't you take this one?
You know, so I saw that one coming up in the chat, and I kind of laughed at myself because me and my buddy Gino here in Montreal is also a Boston fan and he listens to the show. We call him Popeye Thighs because the guy's thighs, it's like Steen's thighs. It's like the engine this kid is running on. I like Steen. I've always liked him. I think he's got a little bit more upside than people might give him. I think he could be middle six and possibly fill in for a top six in a pinch. Let's mm-hmm. not, you know, he's not going to be a top six guy. I don't think so, but he can fit. He's the kind of guy that he can fill in on the top line in a pinch.
I see a Craig Smith, but maybe not a volume shooter, Craig Smith, but a hardworking guy who can, you know, get in on the offense as well as, you know, be able to maybe play in a top six role, like you said, in a pinch. I 100% agree with what you said.
Constantly moving his legs. That's what I really like about him. And even down in Providence, he still continued to work. It looks like that he's on his, let's see, he is on his last year of his entry-level deal. He's going to be an RFA with Arbrights. And right now he's making $800,000. That's at the NHL level. It's $80,000 down in the American Hockey League. And he's a 24-year-old. So I think that he comes into the fold. I think that they could easily sign him because they do have enough contracts. They have 45 of 50 contracts that are signed. There's probably going to be some departures over the offseason that could create room for him. But it's also going to be probably a two-way deal, two-year, you know, just to keep him in the middle depth and continue to work and try to outplay current members on the roster for NHL time. So I like the player. He's just a real hard worker, and he's just you know, puts that, it's that lunch pail type of freaking mentality. Just comes to freaking work, does what he's told, and you know, if he doesn't meet expectations, he just goes back to the drawing board and works even harder. And you like to see that from players that just don't, if they're not meeting what they're supposed to be, that they're pretty much, you know, giving up or their epic fails or their busts in the draft. So I think that he's just going to be one of those really sought after, like middle depth guys like Cameron Hughes. Cameron Hughes has sneakingly had a really good minor pro season down in Providence with the Bruins top minor pro affiliate. And I think that he gets, he's underrated, to be honest with you. That's Providence. That's a whole different freaking show right there.
You mentioned he moves his legs a lot. Referring to Steen, what's great about players like that, I find, is that guys like that tend to draw a lot of, get a lot of penalties, right? because they're always moving their feet. So that's the, you know, that's, it's an important part of the game as well, you know, because you, especially a team like Boston that relies on, you know, their power play tools, even though, you know, they're not doing much with it right now. You know, those are good players to have. They keep moving their feet and they keep drawing penalties. You know, it's a part of the game that's not talked about enough, I find.
You know what, Ange, that's a very good point right there. Is Steen is a Euro, and I think Euros take a lot longer to get the North American game involved. And when you say moving their feet and getting penalties, you could really, really like line that up to where Victor Berglund is right now, which is another Boston Bruins prospect and a defenseman that came over this year. And he's a feet mover and really good laterally, really good with the puck. It reminds me of another Torrey Krug or the speed of a Jack O'Shaughnessy down in Providence. But he did that as well. He was getting penalties because he was constantly moving his feet, trying to do the right things. And over the season, he's gotten better and better, where now he's not getting so many penalties. He's more, you know, his IQ is certainly picked up as the year comes to a close. Because we are coming up to an hour right now. So let's hear from the amazing Bruce Sullivan from Boston Sports and Music Memorabilia. And we'll be right back on the other side.
Hello, Bruins fans. This is Bruce from Boston Sports and Music Memorabilia with our Black and Gold Memorabilia Moment of the Week. We are proud to have hosted Bruins legendary goalie, Reggie Lemelin. Take home a Lemelin black or white Bruins jersey with two inscriptions and JSA authentication for just $79. Or grab a Lemelin JSA puck or photo for just $34. And we are pleased to announce some big April upcoming signings. On April 24th, we've got Jerry Cheevers and Miracle on Ice gold medalist Dave Christian. For more information on our dozens of Bruins hand-signed pieces and your chance to win free memorabilia each week, check us out at our Facebook page, Boston Sports and Music Memorabilia, or email us directly at bostonsportsandmusic@gmail.com. And be sure to tune in each week right here to the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. Let's go!
All right, we are back. You just heard Bruce Sullivan from Boston Sports and Music Memorabilia. He's got some fantastic stuff. Spice up that fan cave, boys, girls. It's time. It's playoff time. You need more black and gold. Get all that Patriots and Red Sox and Celtics crap out of there. It's playoff hockey, baby. LFG.
Oh my god. I love that. Did you make that?
No, actually somebody on Twitter was like, I don't know, somebody that just like comes out with a design and it tweeted it out, and I was just like, oh man, I say that all the time at work. Every time I punch in, grab a coffee, I just start walking to my station. I'm just like, LFG.
Love it.
They all think I'm crazy anyway.
I need that enthusiasm in my life.
What are you gonna do with these creepy Twitter graphic designers that
I know, and the ones that send those really odd gifts that you're thinking that somebody's looking out of my closet, like, hey, hey fella. <The creeper. laughs> That's too funny. All right. Let's get back. Marlene's in the house. Hello, Marlene. Great to see you. Thank you for being a supporter. And if I'm not mistaken, you're still a Patreon, and we appreciate your financial contribution. And where do we stand with DeBrusk? He's been hot over the last seven games. Does his contract have performance clause? I'm not sure on that one, Marlene, but he has been playing very well. And definitely need players like that. I mean, if he's getting the trust on the first line, he's got to produce. Because, you know, if you're not producing next to players like Marchand and Bergeron on that same top line, then you know, it's not going to work out. And you know, is another question to tail off of Marlene's was if DeBrusk kind of tails off, who goes up to that line? That's one that I've always kind of thought about, because they did try freaking Smith there, and Pasternak has played there in the past, but I'm seeing a better passing act this year on the second line than I'd have with him on the first line. Is that a fair statement, Ange?
It's fair, but my mind went straight to when you said if he tails off, who are we going to put there? And I don't really have an answer. I mean, I think instinctively I would say if Pasta's still out or they're still managing his injury, I would try Taylor up there for at least a few games, because he did play with them a little bit, right? But yeah, it didn't seem to spark. Or
there was a game or two where we saw something that I was like, wow, that's really cool. But then I think with a little more trust, I don't think Bruce saw exactly what he wanted. I think that he was more suitable on that second line. And obviously when the Pasternak moved down, that kind of sparked Hall's creativity and ability to pass the puck back and forth from the left to the right and look for a player like Pasternak, which is cocked and loaded.
If you don't want to break up the lines too much because they seem to be working, the only real line you can really tinker with right now is the fourth, because we have so many pieces that we can fit in there.
Yeah.
So, and forgive me, I don't know the right side, left side. I don't know everybody by heart, but I don't know if maybe we could stick Nosek up there. He seems to have some finishing skill.
Yeah, he does. And he's been as high as the first line. Not for long though, but he could rise up like Holla did. I mean, Holla was signed and projected to be a bottom, a bottom six player. And look where he is now. It's just that, and I said it in several podcasts, when he got sat and had to see a game after that, his game really elevated. I probably said that word terribly wrong. But, he rose to the occasion and he started playing really well, using his speed effectiveness. And he was a real, like, wrecking ball, to be honest with you. And I liked his game, where he was at. And look, we got him for, like, $2-3 million, which is a hashtag Sweeney's.
You know, we were talking about the core before, the core question. I forget who asked it. But if you look at these last few free agent signings this 2 year, you know, I think Sweeney, they've obviously talked about Bergeron leaving and Bergeron retiring. They're not sitting on their hands doing nothing, right? They know what's going on. They know better than we do. I think it's a good roadmap. And honestly, what people don't tend to realize is that as this core is getting older, there's a new core that's forming, you know. Lindholm automatically becomes part of that core because of the contract he signed. You know, McAvoy is he's here for what, 9 years? You know, Marshy's another 2 years. He's still going to be part of that core. And I have no doubt that Pasta's probably going to end up re-signing. I think he's one of these players that he loves Boston too much, and they're going to find a way to make it work. Carlo. So, yes, the core is getting older, but you have these other players that he brought in that mixed in with some, you know, younger players that are now becoming this new core. So I don't think the rebuild is going to be, I think it's going to be more of a retool, and you'll never find a player like Bergeron. That's a pipe dream. You know, that's more generational player. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. The whole Bergeron talk's interesting because it all depends on how he feels at the end of this year. And we all know that the playoffs are a totally different season. Expectations are higher, your game level rises, and the game gets harder. I mean, you're pretty much skating in cement by that time if you can go all the way. So we're going to have to see how far he can stretch his body out for a run and then evaluate from there. And I think that's why Bergeron doesn't want to go like, yeah, let's do a 3-year extension, because he doesn't want to commit to something that he possibly can't do. And I have much respect for a player like that. That's not about the money. It's not about this and that. It's about his physical abilities. And he just seems like the type of player that looks at the depth and says, you know, if I can't go and I push myself, what am I doing to a player that could be rising up the ladder? I'm blocking that player, you know? He's just that type of person that I would probably think about all kinds of scenarios like that. I don't want to see him go. He's been the best defensive forward I've ever seen in my life. to be straight honest with you. And he's absolutely leading the way in Selke votes right now. And he'll possibly win it. So it's always a tough subject to talk about. But my biggest thing is and you alluded to it, Ange, was what are we doing next for Bergeron when he leaves? Who's that next guy? And you're absolutely right. If you look down the depth, I don't see it. I honestly don't see it, but I think that it will be addressed as soon as he's gone. So if this season and he's gone, the highest freaking center out there and that could be a free agent and probably won't resign in Pittsburgh because of the salary cap constraints is a player like Evgeny Malkin. And he's a world-class talent, still plays at a very high level, but is that the type of player you want in your locker room? Because he's known to be a very dry kind of all about himself type of player where character is a huge thing in the Boston Bruins freaking locker room. And that might not be a welcoming factor.
They stay away from that. You know, it's like all the Evander Kane talk and, you know, you were a big, like you had a big voice in saying, you know, they have to look at it because, you know, they have to do their due diligence, but they were never going to get him. Listen, they got rid of Tyler Seguin because of all the whole Tyler Seguin shenanigans. I don't want to go into, but you know, they got rid of a guy who, you know, could have been, you know, because I don't think he ever reached his potential in Dallas. But, and not to say that he's not a great player, but the Bruins don't like this type of stuff. You know, they're known for wanting their locker room to be tight-knit and good character, you know. And name me whatever center, even in the league right now, nobody replaces Bergeron. That's just my opinion. You know, so you're never going to find another Bergeron, you know, so you're in that, but they're in a good spot with this young core that they have. I don't think they're in a spot, like a lot of people say, like when Bergeron goes, of course, there's going to be a drop off. You lose a player like that, but it's not going to be that long.
When it comes to Seguin, they traded a kid who was being a kid. I look at that move all the time and I just say to myself, what the hell? Like I think it was the wrong move. I mean, at the time, the Claude Julien system, I don't think benefited Seguin anyways, but a Bruce Cassidy system definitely would have benefited him for sure. I mean, I wouldn't have moved on from him like they did. I mean, you allow that to kind of, you just signed him to, you know, a very team friendly deal. I mean, see it out for a little bit, you know, in my opinion, see it out for a little bit, but who knows?
I think it's the outside factors, Kev. I don't think it had anything to do with, I think it's more all the whatever the noise.
He was good friends with Marchand in the room. I don't think he was a bad locker room guy. I mean, you hear stuff about how he slept with Horton's wife. Who knows if that's true? I mean, I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, who does?
If he did, well, you can't blame him.
Yeah. and Horton wasn't coming back anyways. So it's like, I don't know.
You know what? If ever we chat offline there, I'll cue you in on some stories. I heard of some Montreal Canadian stories here about stuff that goes on outside. You know, the whole, everybody found it strange back in the day when they traded Cristobal Huet, like out of nowhere. But there's a whole story behind that was, you know, the teams don't like a lot of this outside distraction. We don't look at that as fans. We look at it like, okay, like what you said, Kevin, which is totally, you know, on point, where he's a good guy in the room, but the team will look at, you know, like, you know, you hear stories like they had to have a security guard at his hotel room in Toronto because, you know, he was going out at night and he wasn't coming back to his hotel room. And then he was playing a playoff game. You know, that's not, you
kid
know,
being a kid.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough at that. I mean, because you look at it now, it's like in Dallas. I mean, they've had no issues with him whatsoever as far as his character or anything. I just think he needs a little bit of time to mature.
Yeah,
he just needs some time to mature. And I mean, you have a talent like that. I mean, they said the same thing about Hall. He just needs a little bit of time to mature. That's it. You know, it's like just let him do his thing. I don't know. I mean, kids are kids.
Hey, going back on the center position talk, Pejman comes in here with a very interesting one, and I know we talked about it a while ago, but he says they have about 4.5 million in cap space for the next year right now. I would use the cap relief from the above trades to sign a guy like Kadri. Lots of history with him, but he would give us elite talent at center. And he's having an unbelievable season this year. It is a contract year and so on.
That's that's my worry with Kadri. I've never really seen this type of production out of him before. And then the production I've seen out of him before that, if I'm not mistaken, has been, I mean, not really the craziest. I mean, I don't know. I feel like you're going to end up paying for the year he's having opposed to what he's probably going to give you over the long term with Kadri. That's just my opinion.
Can you just imagine Kadri and Marshawn on the same team, though?
God.
All right.
Talk about Department of Player Safety.
They'd move to Boston.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Ange, I see that you have to bounce.
Yeah, I have to bounce. Sorry, guys. It's, a lot of stuff taking care of with the kids and all that. But I want to thank you guys for having me on. I know we've tried this a few times.
Yeah, I totally understand, my friend. And thank you for your time today. Really appreciate it. I thought you did really well, really calm, cool, and collected. And thank no you. Worries at all. Like I said, it's just a bunch of guys just sitting at a bar having a beer and just talking.
For sure. Just
I
have to drive. If not, I'd be having a beer right now.
I hear that.
No, I enjoyed talking with you. I appreciate you having you on. It was a lot of fun. We're not going to be on here for a crazy amount of time longer anyway. So you're pretty much here for most of the time. So, we enjoyed it and it was good talking to you, and I'll see you on Twitter, bud.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate you guys and the rest of the network, guys. All right.
Absolutely. Thank you for the support, man. I really appreciate it and everything else. Also, I want to give you a shout out for that memorial picture of my Buster. That's awesome. We're going to be making t-shirts about that, and I'm going to send one to you.
It's my pleasure, bud.
All right. Take care, man.
Take care.
All right. That was the great Angelo, a really good graphic designer, much like yourself, and a passionate Bruins fan in Montreal, Canada. So we're going to have him on again because he was a lot of fun.
I agree.
All right. Where do we go now? Let's get some topics going in the chat to keep this thing going for just a little while longer. And if not, we're just going to sit here and shoot the shit for a little while and then I'll edit this and get it out and get ready for the Providence Bruins game tonight. So I'm psyched about that.
Mm. Yeah, I need to get that AHL TV one day. I do.
It's so worth it. And it's not like the prices when New Leon was operating the shitty streams and so on. This is a company from I think it's My Hockey. Hockey TV. And they do a fantastic job. And the price, I used to get the full season package was all 30 some odd teams, home and away. And that was like, I want to say it was upwards of $300 back in the day. When Hockey TV came in and took over, you can get the full season for like $100. Or you can get the full season for just one team, home and away, for like $79, $80. So it's really not that bad.
No, not at all.
So who knows? Maybe if Kevin sticks around for a while and he earns a little around here, maybe the BNG Productions will just surprisingly get him a subscription for everything that he does here on the podcast, subscription next year. So
that'd be dope.
I'm going to write that down. I'll have the accountant take care of it.
He's writing it down. You heard it here.
Absolutely. Oh, we got a shout out here from Mr. Steve McEachran. Shout out to the Valley Wildcats and goaltender Anton Lioneski. I can't say that word very good. He has been a wall in the MHL playoffs. I watch a couple MHL stuff on Hockey TV myself. It's pretty good hockey up there. More or less like Junior Bruins type of stuff down here.
Yeah, I never watched it. Interesting. Cool.
Anything you want to talk about there, Kevo?
God, I feel like everything, I feel like we've already gone over pretty much most of everything. You know, it's like at this point, it's just kind of going further in depth. I mean, where can we go? There's so many places to go. I mean, so who do you want to see first round?
Ah, see, I don't even know who we'd be playing, to be honest with you. I haven't really.
You had a choice.
I wish they had the projections.
Like, if it was up to you and there was no standings, who would you want to play first round out of any of the playoff teams here in the East? No, let's not go any. Let's go realistic here. Let's go Toronto, Tampa, Carolina, and Florida, because those are the realistic ones.
You know? Traditionally, I would want to go for the toughest team first.
Yeah, I agree. I said that not too long ago.
Because I think the path, obviously, you're going to get one out of the way if you happen to win that series. So get Tampa out of the way. And, you know, then who knows if Carolina is going to be around. You roll the dice with mm-hmm. that. You don't know if Toronto is going to be around, which would be an easier path. And and I don't believe that they'll ever get out of a first round because I just don't like Toronto. I don't know. But, yeah, I would like to see Tampa Bay first. And if it was anything that we saw last night's game against the Lightning, that's playoff hockey right there.
Yeah.
You know, it's in your face. It's going to be tight. I was going to send this out on Twitter last night, but last night's game just seemed to be one of those games that it's going to be an ugly bounce that wins this game.
Right.
Like somebody's going to float one into the crease and it's going to hit a skate and it's just going to go right by. And obviously, you know, Bruins Twitter is going to go absolutely crazy because they think Ullmark sucks for letting the goal in. But
yeah,
you know,
82-0, no goals against. Yeah, that's exactly. Literally what you need here in Boston. Yeah,
I still love what I do to Bruins fans that still like tremendously shit on that guy and the signing. I'm always like, he's got the worst plus minus.
Yeah, no shit.
And they're like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, he's on the ice for every goal. He's got the worst plus minus. He's terrible.
That's so true. Plus minus is very telling stat, apparently. Yeah, but not
for goaltenders. But...
For me, it's like, I got some hot takery here, but I think this is the year that Toronto makes it out of the first round. And I really don't want it to be against the Boston Bruins. I really don't.
No.
So I don't want to see Toronto first round. I'd rather see them second round. Tampa or Florida would be my choice for first round. I'd prefer Florida because I think that the Lightning will take care of Tampa. I mean, sorry, that sounded retarded. I think that Toronto will take care of Tampa. Wow. I think that would set you up for a Boston-Toronto second round, something that we haven't seen in a very long time. So I think that could be very interesting. I would definitely – if we were to finish in that, I think we'd have to – no, I don't think there's any chance we see Florida at this point because I don't think they're going to pass. I don't think Carolina is going to finish first. I think it's going to be Florida. So if you finish second wild card, you're facing Carolina. If you finish third or second, you're probably facing Toronto. I don't think you're facing Tampa, and I don't think you're facing Florida. At this point, I think it's Carolina or Toronto. That kind of sucks.
Yeah. That's interesting, though.
Isn't it?
So it's so weird to think about. I'm not good at any prediction when it comes to playoffs and stuff like that. Let's get the seedings going and LFG, you know?
Yeah. I mean, whoever we face, it is what it is. I mean, if we face Carolina first round and we lose, oh, well, we have a better draft, you know, positioning for the second round in this year. So whatever. It is what it is. I mean, obviously I'd like to see them win, but it's going to be a tough road. And you got to remember, 15 teams lose in the playoffs. Only one wins.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's you got to go into every single year. You got to go in realistically knowing there is a very small chance that your team is going to win a cup. Just got to hope that everything kind of falls the way that we need it to. If we can take care of a team like Carolina or Toronto first round, though, That's going to be huge moving forward.
Well, Pejman says this right here about Carolina. Playing Carolina wouldn't scare him at all. We have owned them in the playoffs, and even though they were swept swept us this season, one game with Raskin, one with Brad suspended, also would jump to the Metro.
I mean, it's not just the fact that Marchand wasn't in there. It was actually Marchand and Bergeron wasn't playing. I mean, that is something that, you know, you got to look at. But the one with Tuukka in net, I mean, it's not that game was not on Tuukka. That the team from top to bottom was absolutely atrocious. They played so bad, and they looked like squirts playing against college kids. Like, that's what it looked like. It was so bad. And I mean, they still definitely do scare me. That they scare me. They have a very well put together team. It would be a real test to beat them.
Yeah. In my opinion. Follows up with, he would rather face Pittsburgh, New York in round two than Florida or the Leafs team that finally got over the hump. We'll see.
I don't think that's something that can't happen, though, because in the second round, you're always playing someone from your division.
Right.
I'm pretty sure. Well, I think because.
Well, wait a minute. Didn't the Bruins play the Carolina Hurricanes a while back, and it was in the second round? Because then they jumped to the Metro.
That was the last time they played them in the second round was back in the 2009-2010 season.
Oh, I thought it was recently.
That was the East Conference Final.
Oh,
in 2019.
All right, my rounds are getting messed up then.
Yeah, I think because I'm pretty sure in the second round. So let's do it like this. I mean, it's Carolina versus, I don't know. I don't even want to get into it. My brain hurts thinking about it, but I don't know. I might not be right on that. But I don't think there's any chance you see either of those teams in the second round. I think it's because if it's the Bruins versus Panthers, and let's say it's Tampa versus Tampa versus Toronto, the two winners of those games would go on to face each other, while the two winners from the other division would go on to face each other, and then the two of them meet. Pretty sure that's how that works.
240 Meatballs is in the house. What's up? Hey, boys, great show today. Have we tackled the Foligno situation with 11 games left? Don't we have to give some others an opportunity?
Pejman, thank you.
Who is making the decision to keep him in the lineup? What did Pejman say?
He told me that, yeah, they played Columbus in the 2019 second round. You're right. You're absolutely correct. It does not – the second round does not guarantee that. It's all goes by seeding at that point. It gets reseeded. That's how it works. Yep, you're right. Yep. That's why I said I don't know if I'm 100% right on this. But yeah, Columbus. Yep, thank you.
What about the Foligno talk? Where are we at with that? Because it seems to be a frustrating factor for a lot of Boston Bruins fans that just don't seem to think that he's giving it all and somebody should be taking his spot away from him. But I think, in my opinion, I think that you're just getting playoff Foligno ready. So if he's going to be in the lineup, I don't think it's going to generally hurt them. Is he going to make a mistake? Yeah, but everybody makes mistakes. So I don't know. I can't really clam for somebody to be out of the lineup because I'm not in the room and I'm not in the decision-making process. So it is what it is. I mean, unless we're losing tremendous amounts of games and it's all his fault, then I'd be kind of on the ledge, ready to jump, but I'm not fully on board with that yet.
I'm on board with giving him rest for the rest of the regular season. I mean, not every game, of course, but give him more rest and get him ready for playoffs. But you're gonna want him there playoffs. You're gonna want him in the room for sure. That's one of the areas you're gonna want that guy is in the room.
Kevin Gordon's in the house. What up, Kev? Kind of looks bubble set up where we totally avoided the Toronto Maple Leafs altogether. Being a Niagara resident, so done with them. Would love to see something other than the same teams year in after. Yeah, oh, I totally understand that. It does get boring, but you do, you know, especially somebody that lives in the Toronto area, you gotta love seeing the morale in the city just go down when Boston comes in and just ruins your expectations for a cup that you haven't seen since 1967. So, I mean, it's a long time.
I think I think they need to go back to the 1-8 conference seeding.
See, I like that. I always like that.
Yep.
And stupid football when they came in and used the stupid wild card and then hockey freaking, oh, that seems like a great idea. Let's do that. And then they did it. And it's like,
like one plays 8, 2 plays 7, 3 plays 6, 5 plays 4.
Exactly. You know,
that's the way I always enjoyed it, because you have a chance of getting to see different teams, and it also allows for, you know, the teams who finished well to be able to be rewarded for that. Like, you want the top three guys, the top three teams who won their divisions, to have the lesser opponents so they can make it further into the playoffs. It just makes sense. It's like, what's the point of battling all regular season if, you know, you're going to finish second or third and you're guaranteed to play, you know, a really hard opponent first round. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. It's like, I understand the point of the regular season is to make sure you get into the playoffs. I get that. It still has a meaning, but not like it did for the other format, which they should go back to.
Sharon Dietz chimes in. Hope she's doing very well. And Sharon, I got some stuff for you on the way, but I ran out of bubble wrap. So with the supply demand lately, it's really sucks. I should be getting that sometime this week, so I'll be sending that stuff out to you. But she says, agreed, 1-8, bring it back.
So it was more interesting too. It really was.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, did they reseed after the first?
Yeah.
So it went 1-8, and then they didn't reseed it after that.
Because you would just go with, you know, so say like the 8th seed beat the first seed. Well, now the second seed becomes the highest seed if they made it through, or right. If they didn't, the third seed is now the highest seed if they made it through. It's it's definitely interesting.
Let's see. Momo, will Zboril be back for the playoffs? Absolutely not. And it's probably not a good idea to rush that anyway. And like Pejman said, it's an ACL, so it's going to take its time. He is a UFA at the end of the season, and of course my computer is so slow, but he's not an RFA anymore, if I'm not mistaken, and I cannot navigate. I hate this freaking computer. I would like to see him back. I think that there was a lot of really good things that we saw this season when he was given the opportunity, got some games, got some trust out of the coaching staff, and I thought he played really well. And it was a shining light for a 2015 draft that always gets hampered on for being a fail. But I think he's going to be somebody in the fold next year. I think that they really saw something good in him. And, you know, he's at that age where, he's learning a lot more, and getting more time at the NHL level really benefited him. I didn't see this game in Providence. I thought he played a very good game in Providence, but he didn't elevate himself to the level he was at the NHL like this down at Providence. So I think being in the moment and being in the limelight really, you know, stepped it up for him. And hopefully he comes back, because I like the way he was moving. And please, just for one game, Hampus down with Carlo, and Zboril up with McAvoy. Just once, Bruce. Just once. I'll buy you a beer.
I'm on board with once.
Yeah, see? I wanted it more last year because Hampus wasn't around.
Exactly. Now that Hampus is here, yeah, it's different. Yeah,
you don't want that now.
Yeah, I'd like to see Zboril with Carlo, though, like 100%. I'd love to see that. But, I mean, when people look at that 2015 draft, it's like, you know, it's all doom and gloom. But if you look at it, you got two players out of the three who are playing for your team. I understand Zboril's hurt right now, but if he wasn't, he would be a very important piece to that defense. He'd be much needed right now. He can play the right side. He's versatile. He'd be much needed on the right side of that bottom pairing.
Yeah.
And then DeBrusk, I mean, he's He's DeBrusk. He's playing well. He looks good. He looks like a top six guy. You got to be happy about that. So unless you were looking for three superstars, out of those three picks, you're going to be very upset. But if you weren't, you were just looking for NHL players, you got two out of three. So,
yeah. Interesting one from 240 Meatballs. Who comes up from Providence to act as the third goaltender come playoff time, or that kind of peripheral black ace?
Can I take a stab at this before you do, just to see if I'm right on this? Because you're more of the Providence guy.
Good.
Grossnick. Well, yeah. It just makes most sense. I mean,
well, yeah, he's on a two-way deal and he's having a fantastic season down at Providence. I would give him all the trust. I mean, he's 15-4-4 and something like that. He's leading the league in goals against average and save percentage. Yeah, I mean, this is probably exactly why you got a goaltender like that during the offseason. Not only to have some sustainability and a veteran presence to Kyle Kaiser, Callum Booth, when he had opportunities to play up here. Jeremy Berdur. Yeah, and he's been a really good soldier for Ryan Muchinel down in Providence and a real veteran leadership. So that's who I would give it to. And I know that he's not a prospect per se, and Kaiser is. And I know there's going to be some pushback that prospects should get the opportunity and blah, blah, blah. But Kaiser's been up here before in the Black Aces. And, you know, but also, you know, Providence is going in a different direction lately. Their last 10 games, their record is really not that good. But they're still in the mix in the Calder Cup playoffs, which is going to happen this year. I'm super stoked for that. The Providence Bruins haven't been in the playoffs for the last two seasons, and that's due to the pandemic. There's nothing to do with them being out. And to be honest with you, the last 2 years, if they were in the playoffs, I think they could have made long stretch into the Calder Cup. I'm not sure about winning it, but getting there, I had them, you know, high. But I think they're going to have a good season. The first round is a round of three, and then it goes to seven games after that in round two, three, and four. So right now we're matched up with the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, and I think we play them pretty decently. So it's going to be fun, and it's a big year for Ryan Muchinel. He's the first year coach of the Providence Bruins this year, and this is the first time he's ever coached a head coach job in the American Hockey League, and I thought he's done pretty well, you know. Yeah, that's who I would. I mean, Gross has just been really good. He's just some of the saves for a 32-year-old goaltender. It's like I have a hard enough time getting out of my freaking office chair. This guy is like sitting down in a crease and just freaking busting out saves left and right, and it's just like, damn, dude, you're 32. You're not supposed to be doing that.
Right. Jesus. I can barely move. I'm toast.
Yeah. All right. If nobody's got anything else, I think it's probably going to be an appropriate time to call this a show.
I think so, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's do it. Let's talk about our Patreon account. If anybody wants to pitch in and donate $1 per episode, we'd certainly appreciate that. And for doing so, when you go to patreon.com/blackandgoldhockeypodcast and you donate just $1, we do about four episodes. Sometimes we do six a month. It's back and forth, but it's a very small investment, but it could earn you some really cool stuff, like weekly giveaways, like signed pucks, you know, all this freaking awesome stuff, all fully authenticated and everything. And also hand-signed jerseys. This month, Jerry Cheevers, fully authenticated, hand-signed Stanley Cup 1970-72. Signature right there. Awesome stuff. All that for $1. So we do these jerseys once a month, and we do the pucks and the signed photos every week. So, yeah, we're giving this away this month, the middle of the month sometime. We'll pick a day and do that. But this week's winner is Mr. Dale Lind, and I'm going to be sending him a puck and a jersey because he was the monthly winner last month. So congratulations, Dale, and thank you for your contributions. You are a dumb man, and everybody else that is great people that including Sharon and so on that contribute financially. We truly appreciate that. It helps us put the lights on here in the Black and Gold Production Sports Media Company. But yeah. We got a few more comments. Congratulations, Dale. Thanks, gentlemen. Thank you, everybody. We really appreciate it. Like I said, we're probably going to be doing these more often. We have negotiating with a new sponsor right now, and that's kind of exciting and kind of nervous at the same time, because back in the office negotiating contracts and so on. But it's hopefully something comes out soon, because this is a decent company, and we're just going to create a little more revenue for the company and more opportunities for digital content here at BNG. So we appreciate all the support, all the listens, the retweets, the shares, the interaction on Twitter. You guys are amazing. I mean, I could be grumpy sometimes. Everybody can be grumpy. Twitter's grumpy. Mm. Twitter is a grump.
Yeah, if you run into me on a bad day on Twitter, I can get. But I give respect, unless respect is not reciprocated.
Yeah, the name calling come out, it's like, okay, now it's on.
Yeah.
All right, but nobody's name calling here. Thank you very much to Angelo from Montreal for joining us. Kevin O'Keefe, your time today has been greatly appreciated. And please enjoy the rest of your Saturday and the weekend and tomorrow's game against the Washington Capitals. And hopefully everybody else has a safe and happy weekend. And let's go Bees. We got 10 more games to go, and it's getting there. So lots of exciting stuff. Danielle from Brazil, what's up? Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Hopefully I got you some follows yesterday with that shout out. So anyway, thank you very much, everybody. What do we do here, Kevin? We do a peace out, right?
Peace out.
I love it. Thanks again for tuning in and supporting this week's episode of the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. Please give the show a 5-star rating and write a review on listening platforms such as Apple Podcasts and Spotify Podcasts. If you'd like to contact the show for advertising opportunities or to send us a question or topic idea we should be discussing, please send us an email to blackandgoldproductionsllc@gmail.com. Don't forget to share our program on your social media platforms with other hockey fans and follow our Twitter accounts @blackandgoldpod, @BNGProductions, @blackandgold277, and @Kevin_O'Keefe89. Also, please don't forget to check out our official blackandgoldhockey.com website, where we cover the Bruins organization from the NHL level down to the prospects worldwide. Peace out.